Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The mission of the Christian Research Institute is to equip believers to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have with gentleness and respect. To join us on air with your question, dial 888-ASK-HANK, which translates to 888-275-4265. For more information, go online to equip.org. And now, here's Bible Answer Man host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. As always, it is great to be in studio as we answer your questions throughout the United States and Canada. Do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your questions answered live. When you dial 888-ASK-HANK, that translates to 888-275-4265. I want to spend some time today on the broadcast dealing with what I think is the most significant apologetic issue of all, and that is the issue of origins. How one views their origins will inevitably determine how they live their lives. If you believe that you're a function of random chance, that you arose from the primordial slime, you're going to live your life by a different standard than if you know that you are created in the image of God and accountable to Him. And the reason I want to deal with this particular issue today is that there is an article in the Christian Research Journal, our award-winning magazine, titled Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design. It is an article written by Stephen Meyer, who directs the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. He has authored some of the most incredible books, including Signature in the Cell and Darwin's Doubt. And what I want to underscore here, first and foremost, is that the magazine is our way of equipping you so that you're always ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within you with gentleness and with respect. It turns out that the evidence is on our side of the ledger. And so often we're unaware of that and therefore cannot use the evidence in an appropriate way. I think about what Richard Dawkins, who is the professor of the public understanding of science at Oxford, and probably the best-known Darwinist on the planet, has to say about those who believe in the biblical account of origins. He says that those who do not believe in the evolutionary paradigm are ignorant, they're stupid, they may be insane. But Stephen Meyer doesn't talk like that. In place of rhetoric, in place of emotional stereotypes, he, as an intelligent design proponent, holds to reason and empirical science. He's willing to follow scientific evidence wherever it leads, and that's how we ought to be doing science. Intelligent design theorists neither presuppose nor preclude supernatural explanations for what they encounter in an information-rich universe. And as such, the intelligent design movement rightly practices open-minded science. And this is a point I think we should be making over and over again. Philosophical naturalists, they only allow for natural explanations for what they encounter in the universe. Christians are open-minded. They allow for both natural as well as supernatural explanations for what they encounter. And this is precisely what we are called to do. As always, it is great to have Stephen Meyer on the broadcast. Welcome.
It's great to hear your voice, Hank. Nice to have a chance to talk again.
Well, you know, I've really appreciated your work, as you know, over the years. And the article you wrote for the Christian Research Journal, Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design, underscores something that I think is missing in the emotional rhetoric that you hear from current evolutionists. Darwin seemed to be willing to express his doubts.
Absolutely. One of the things I often say is that in contrast to many of his public defenders today, his work was characterized by some rhetorical modesty, and he was willing to acknowledge places where he thought his theory did not fully explain the facts. And one of those facts that he knew his theory didn't explain was the event in the history of life known as the Cambrian Explosion, which is describes the sudden appearance, the geologically abrupt appearance of the first major groups of animals in the fossil record. And that was the subject of both the article I did in your fine journal and also the longer piece I did by the same title, Darwin's Doubt, the recent book that I've published.
Let's explain a couple of things here as we set the table for this discussion. First of all, let's talk about Darwin's Tree of Life. It's an icon, and oftentimes the icon becomes the argument.
Well, absolutely. There's really two parts of Darwinian theory. One is the historical part, and Darwin claimed that that the history of life could be best depicted as a great branching tree, where the trunk or the roots of the tree represent the first probably one-celled living organism, and all the branches at the top of the tree represent the complex forms of life we see today. And somewhere along the line, the first animals would have arisen. But what we actually see in the fossil record is not a gradual unfolding of life from simple to complex, but the first, especially in the case of the first animals, the first complex forms of animal life arise very abruptly, not in a tree-like pattern, but something that's much more like a lawn or perhaps an orchard of separate trees, where you don't have all of the different lines of descent connecting back to a single trunk or root. So that was one of the puzzling things about the Cambrian explosion to Darwin, that the pattern in the fossil record did not match that tree-like depiction of the history of life that he advanced in The Origin of Species.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Cambrian period. There's such a thing as biology's Big Bang, cosmology's Big Bang, and the Cambrian explosion is just that. It is biology's Big Bang.
Biology's Big Bang, absolutely. And in fact, there was a cover story in Time magazine back in the mid-90s after one of the great Cambrian finds was starting to get a lot of publicity over in China. And the cover story was called Evolution's Big Bang, but one of the paleontologists who was interviewed in the story said, well, you know, what I like to ask my evolutionary biology friends is this: how much faster does this have to happen before we stop calling it evolution? So, you know, the abruptness of the appearance of these very complex forms of animal life is very much surprising from a Darwinian point of view.
There are a lot of people in the Christian community that call into question the Cambrian period. How do you respond?
Well, you know, the argument for intelligent design is officially age neutral because we're really not wading into the question of whether the Earth is old or young. But I happen to hold an old Earth view. We have ID proponents that hold a young Earth view. The Cambrian is typically dated at 530 million years ago, and I assume those dates for the purpose of making my argument, and I personally accept them. But really what's important is not so much the absolute age date you assign to the rock, but the pattern you see in the fossil record, which is starkly at odds with the gradual unfolding that you would expect based on the Darwinian theory of universal common descent. In other words, the picture we were just talking about, of the tree-like picture of the history of life. And in addition, the much more important question than even the historical question is what I call the engineering problem. And that is, how would the evolutionary process build these complex forms of animal life? And that the second part of my book concerns that second mystery. The first mystery is the mystery of the missing ancestral fossils. The second part of the book addresses this deeper mystery, which is the mystery of how you would build an animal. How would the evolutionary process, relying as it does on natural selection and random mutations — mutations are just random copying errors in the genetic material — how would that process generate these extraordinarily complex forms of life, knowing as we now know that to build an animal requires huge infusions of new amounts of genetic information? And that's really the critical question, not the question of age or even the question of of the missing fossils.
Talking to Stephen Meyer, he is a leader in the intelligent design movement. He's authored an article for the Christian Research Journal, Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design. He also has authored Signature in the Cell, as well as Darwin's Doubt. Both of those resources you can find on the web at equip.org. And do remember that you can subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. And if you use the special offer code May14, you can get the current edition absolutely free and the subscription as well at a reduced price. Again, you can subscribe online at equip.org or simply call us at 888-7000 and the letters CRI. Stephen, let me ask you a bit of a rhetorical question. If the alleged precursors to the Cambrian animals are as yet absent, why do people still consider Darwin's theory credible?
Well, I think there's actually a huge amount of misinformation in circulation in the culture. And one of the themes of the book that I strike early is that there's a huge disparity between the public presentation of the status of modern Darwinian theory by people like Richard Dawkins or by textbooks or textbook writers on the one hand, and the actual status of the theory as you find it in peer-reviewed scientific literature. And I'm talking about the peer-reviewed literature in evolutionary biology and evolutionary theory. Many people don't realize it, but leading evolutionary biologists are now calling for a new theory of evolution. And the main reason that evolutionary theorists are dissatisfied with the modern version of Darwinian theory called neo-Darwinism is that they recognize that the mechanism of mutation and natural selection does not have the creative power that has long been attributed to it. It does not have the creative power to build compound eyes such as we find in the trilobites, some of the first animals that arise in the fossil record, or the cardiovascular system. All these complex anatomical systems that have been found in these early animals, all of which in turn require massive amounts of new genetic information. And what we know from experience is that if you start randomly changing sections of digital code, and a gene or a section of DNA is a section of digital code, if you start randomly changing a section of a software program, for example, you're going to degrade that information long before you generate a new program or operating system. And the same thing turns out to be true when we're looking at the digital code in the genes, in the DNA. And so this mechanism of mutation and selection is not a mechanism that is plausible for generating the kind of information inputs that would be required to build these new animals. And for that and many other reasons that I document in the book, the mechanism of mutation and natural selection is really on the outs. It's not something that many evolutionary biologists think can get the job done. And so they're looking for new evolutionary mechanisms. Of course, most of them are looking for materialistic or naturalistic mechanisms, but the very fact that they're looking and acknowledging the inadequacy of the neo-Darwinian mechanism underscores just how difficult the situation is for contemporary evolutionary theory.
Are people like Bill Nye, the science guy, aware of the fact that neo-Darwinian mechanism of natural selection, random mutation, cannot account for the complexity of the Cambrian explosion? Are they aware of that, or are they blithely
ignorant?
I'm sure he
isn't. Bill Nye's a smart guy, and I think he's got a master's degree in mechanical engineering, but he was tutored for the debate by two people at the National Center for Science Education, which is a Darwin-only science education lobby, And I doubt that they're really up on what's going on in at the cutting edge of evolutionary biology. There was a conference just a few years ago in Europe at Altenburg, city in Europe, and it called together a group of evolutionary biologists, 16, and they're now known as the Altenburg 16. And these were leading evolutionary biologists representing several new different schools of thought, all of which are dissatisfied with the neo-Darwinian mechanism, and yet that is the standard theory that we all still learn in the high school and college textbooks, and it really is on the outs. The theory, many leading people in the field are saying that the new synthesis, as it's called, the neo-Darwinian theory is effectively dead. And so into that mix, I've presented the theory of intelligent design as an alternative, but I've also critiqued the new theories of evolution that are being proposed. Many of them do have advantages over neo-Darwinism, but they also, as I show in the book, fail to account for the origin of the genetic information that you would need to build these new animal forms.
Talking to Stephen Meyer, again, he is the author of the article in the Christian Research Journal, Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design. He's also authored the book, Darwin's Doubt. If you haven't read it, it's a must-read. Signature in the Cell, absolutely incredible. Both books available. You can find them on the web at equip.org. I want to continue with Dr. Meyer on the other side of the break. Has some intriguing questions for him as well. There are some callers that have some intriguing questions for him as well. We'll continue our discussion in just a few moments. Again, if you have not subscribed to the Christian Research Journal, remedy that woeful situation at equip.org.
Charles Darwin knew that the predictions of his theory of gradual evolution were not fulfilled by discoveries in the fossil record, but he hoped that the gaps would be filled over time. Today, the same problems remain unresolved, while formidable new problems confront his theory from advances in genetics. As even atheist Richard Dawkins acknowledges, the machine code of the genes is uncannily computer-like. The current issue of the Christian Research Journal reveals Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design. Start your subscription today when you call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. Don't change the station. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will be right back. God is a bully, a murderer, and an oppressor. These are some of the most blatant and insidious lies about our Creator that exist today, yet millions believe them, and many Christians struggle to stand against them with truth. That's why we want to send you a copy of a powerful 252-page reassuring defense by Dr. Paul Copan, called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. Biblical, Reasonable, and Readable, Is God a Moral Monster? Equips you to stand for truth about God with gentleness and respect, prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks the reason for the hope that you have. So please request your copy today. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. So call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Is hacker activism the most heroic use of the internet? Liberating data, exposing lies, speaking truth to power? Or is it the most corrupting side of cyberspace? Stealing data, telling secrets, and endangering citizens? Although hacktivism has received much media attention, it has received little moral scrutiny. Other topics include Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design, the Ten Commandments of Apologetics, Was Hitler a Christian? Same-sex marriage and today's church? Is it silly to believe in Noah's flood? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. New atheists and best-selling authors such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett often point to the God of the Old Testament to justify their claims about the implausibility of his existence and the stupidity of those who believe in God. But rather than fall for their rhetoric and emotive stereotypes presented by Dawkins and others, we must commit ourselves to become so familiar with the truth that we recognize lies about God instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's book called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God is a reassuring and helpful tool that will help you do this. That's why we hope you'll request a copy today as our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI or go online at equip.org. God is a bully, a murderer, and an oppressor. These are some of the most blatant and insidious lies about our Creator that exist today, yet millions believe them. That's why we want to help you stand for truth by sending you a copy of a powerful book by Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. Go online at equip.org with your gift and request it. Equip.org. Let's hear more from your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. If all of geological history were compressed into a 24-hour clock, most of the distinct animal forms the world has ever known would appear suddenly within a 2-minute time frame at about the 21st hour. And that abrupt and simultaneous appearance of a wide array of complex body plans, well, it signals an infusion of a vast amount of information, and that can only rightly be attributed to an intelligent designer. In fact, Darwin theorized that every organism evolved from a common ancestor as a result of natural selection acting on random variations, but the Cambrian explosion points in precisely the opposite direction, which caused Darwin to have a doubt, as he explained the distinctiveness of specific forms and their not being blended together by innumerable transitional links is a very obvious difficulty. So you might say that just as cosmology's Big Bang undid the dogma of an eternal universe, biology's Big Bang uprooted Darwin's tree of life. And my guest today, Stephen Meyer, has a lot to say about this. In fact, the article that he penned for the journal is titled Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Dr. Meyer, is there even enough time in the supposed age of the universe to form something as simple as a protein molecule, much less a cell or something more complex?
Well, that's a great question, and it turns out that it renders all debates about whether or not there's the length of the Earth really moot, because even assuming the 520, 530 million years since the Cambrian period, that's not nearly enough time to generate even a single protein or gene. Darwinian biology has a subdiscipline. It's called population genetics. And it allows scientists to estimate how much evolutionary change should take place in a given period of time if you know certain factors like the generation time and the population size and the mutation rates. And I show in two different ways in the book that mathematically there's the amount of change that could take place in the time available is not nearly enough to generate even a single gene or protein, let alone the suites of genes and proteins that would be necessary to build these new animal forms. So it's known as the problem of waiting times. And as you get beyond about three coordinated mutations, the waiting times skyrocket and grow exponentially well beyond the length of the time that life has been on Earth. So it's a real problem, and this is coming right out of evolutionary biology itself. As you look at this subdiscipline of population genetics, what I say in the book is that the Darwinian math shows that the Darwinian mechanism lacks the creative power it needs to have. These are calculations made within the framework of evolutionary theory.
Talk about some of the what I would consider really desperate attempts to explain away the lack of transitional forms in the fossil record. I mean, theories like punctuated equilibrium. Talk about those kinds of theories. They seem desperate.
Well, the biggest or the most popular attempt to explain away the missing ancestral fossils was something called the artifact hypothesis. And the idea was that the missing fossils are an artifact of either incomplete sampling of the fossil record or incomplete preservation. Now, that 150 years on from the origin of species, nobody thinks that we haven't looked hard enough. And on the other side, the incomplete preservation, that idea has also become increasingly implausible. There's a huge find of Cambrian fossils in southern China near a town called Chengjiang. And in the pre-Cambrian layers, just beneath the layer that documents the explosion of the first animal forms, or most of the first animal forms, there have been discovered some very small microscopic sponge embryos. Sponges are primitive animal forms. We've long known that they originated a little bit earlier in the pre-Cambrian. But small microscopic and these are soft-bodied creatures, have been preserved in these pre-Cambrian layers. And that raises a huge question. If you can preserve these small, soft creatures, why aren't the ancestors of all the other animal forms that first arose in the Cambrian also preserved? It looks like the preservational or the depositional environment was perfectly adequate for preserving these ancestors had they existed, but they weren't preserved. And so many leading paleontologists, particularly these leading Chinese paleontologists, think that the Cambrian explosion was a real event and not just an artifact of incomplete sampling. The punctuated equilibrium idea was an idea of Stephen Jay Gould and Niles Eldridge, and they proposed that evolution took place in kind of fits and starts, that it happened very rapidly, and then there were long periods of what they called stasis after that, and they thought that could account for the absence of the ancestral forms because the transitions were taking place so rapidly. And that does describe the fossil record better, but the problem with that theory was that they were never able to discover or devise a mechanism that could cause evolutionary change to take place that quickly. And so that also, I think, is a spent force in evolutionary theory.
Again, we are talking to Stephen Meyer. He's the author of Darwin's Doubt and the Case for Intelligent Design, an article in the Christian Research Journal. If you've not subscribed to the journal, you can do so in a safe, secure fashion on the World Wide Web at equip.org. And if you enter the special offer code May14, you can get the current edition with the article by Stephen Meyer absolutely free, and the subscription at a reduced price as well. I also want to, again, alert you to the fact that if you go to the web, you'll be able to find Stephen's books. He is a wonderful author. He is dealing with very, very complex issues, but in a user-friendly fashion. I love the way you wrote the article. I mean, you look at the combinations of a lock, for example, and a bike thief, and he doesn't have a way of breaking the lock with, I forget what you said in the article, but and so you preclude that possibility. And then you talk about that with respect to how improbable it is to have the kind of information that we have in DNA as a function of just blind chance.
Yeah, well, that's a fun example. Maybe we should talk about it. But if you think of a section of DNA, it's a gene, and along the spine of the DNA molecule are four chemicals that function like alphabetic characters in a written language or digital characters in a section of computer code. And chemists represent them with the letters A, C, G, and T. So if you want to come up with a new gene, you've got to get a new arrangement of those A, C's, G's, and T's. And I liken the problem of generating a new functional gene to the problem of finding the combination of a lock and a bike lock. And I use the example of, say, you've got a thief out in front of your auditorium, and he sees a bike that he would like to steal, and it's got not a four-dial lock, but, say, a 10-dial lock. And the security guard comes around every 10 minutes, is it more likely than not or less likely than not that he's going to crack that combination by chance? Well, he's got 10 billion, 10 to the 10th power possible combinations, and he's only got a few minutes to arrange to spin and respin the dial settings. So he may get searched just a handful of that possibility, and because that handful is a very small fraction of the total, it's much more likely than not that he'll fail to crack the combination by chance. And that's essentially the same problem the mutation selection mechanism has when it comes to finding new genes or proteins. The random mutations have to perform a random undirected search through a vast combination of possibilities, and the possibilities dwarf the number of opportunities there are to search the space. so this is why I conclude, and many others have concluded, that the mutation selection mechanism is an inadequate mechanism for generating new genetic information. It's like that blindfolded thief out there trying to find the combination, and just a few trials when he's got 10 billion to go through.
Let's take a couple calls. Jay, he's listening in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, on Bot Radio. You're on with Dr. Stephen Meyer. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Stephen. Hey, thank you for your guys' work. I'll try to make it real quick. Basically, I was wondering if you guys are familiar with famous philosopher Alvin Plantinga and his evolutionary argument against naturalism. If so, I was wondering, how do you guys relate this type of argument against the popular claim about evolution being unguided?
I'm very familiar with Professor Plantinga's work. In fact, he and I spoke at a conference together in January, and his argument is taking place at a little higher level in the sense that he's looking at the cognitive faculties of the human being. And what he argues is that if you take a strictly undirected Darwinian account of the origin of our cognitive faculties, you have no reason to trust that they are reliable. And if they're not reliable, then in turn, you can't trust any conclusions the mind draws, including scientific conclusions about Darwinian evolution. So he shows that the attempt to base epistemology, as it's called, our theory of how we know things, on Darwinian principles is ultimately self-defeating.
I see. So would that mean that people who would adopt the unguided evolution as a factor, as a belief for saying something, would the argument, if successful, show that they could actually be delusional about everything they're thinking?
Including their belief that unguided, undirected processes produce them in their minds, yeah. It's a very powerful argument, and I'd recommend his work. It's quite good.
Appreciate your call, Jay. We are close to a break. I want to spend the remaining moments before we go to break talking about the Christian Research Journal, and then we are going to come back after the break with more questions for Dr. Stephen Meyer. His book, Signature in the Self, you don't have it, you want to get it. It is a magnum opus for Stephen Meyer, and it's certainly something that you want to have in your library. Also, Darwin's Doubt, you can find both of them on the web at equip.org. But I want to say something about the Christian Research Journal in general. This is a magazine that is teaching you how to discern between wheat and chaff and heat and light. In other words, a magazine that is teaching you discernment skills. We live in an age of information overload. And so often it's hard for you to discern what is true and what is not, what is rhetoric and what is reason. And this magazine helps you in that regard. The current edition of the Christian Research Journal has some of the most incredible arguments for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. It also deals with cultural issues that you need to be able to give an answer when you're asked about these cultural issues. What about same-sex marriage? How are you to respond? There's a new normal right now, and you need to know how to function within the context of that new normal. You need to be wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove. Christian Research Journal does all that and more in equipping you. Again, it is available as a subscription magazine, and right now you can get the Christian Research Journal at a special price, the current issue free. All you have to do is enter the special May 14 code on the web at equip.org. We'll be right back with Stephen Meyer. Please don't touch that dial.
Many people carry around highly destructive beliefs about God that are endorsed by popular atheists of our day. And tragically, they never truly experience intimacy with the Creator of their souls. We want to help you see through any lies you might carry around about God with a powerful book by Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and this Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI with your gift and request it. 888-7000-CRI. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back with more answers from the Bible Answer Man. New atheists and best-selling authors such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett often point to the God of the Old Testament to justify their claims about the implausibility of his existence and the stupidity of those who believe in God. But rather than fall for their rhetoric and emotive stereotypes presented by Dawkins and others, we must commit ourselves to become so familiar with the truth that we recognize lies about God instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's book called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God is a reassuring and helpful tool that will help you do this. That's why we hope you'll request a copy today as our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online at equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Charles Darwin knew that the predictions of his theory of gradual evolution were not fulfilled by discoveries in the fossil record, but he hoped that the gaps would be filled over time. Today, the same problems remain unresolved, while formidable new problems confront his theory from advances in genetics. Other topics include heroes or villains, a Christian assessment of hacktivism, being single in Christ, reanimating apologetics with the undead, one taken, the other left. Who will be left behind? Is the divorced pastor the husband of one wife? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. God is a bully, a murderer, and an oppressor. These are some of the most blatant and insidious lies about our Creator that exist today, yet millions believe them, and many Christians struggle to stand against them with truth. That's why we want to send you a copy of a powerful 252-page reassuring defense by Dr. Paul Copan called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God. Biblical, reasonable, and readable, Is God a Moral Monster? Equips you to stand for truth about God with gentleness and respect, prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks the reason for the hope that you have. So please request your copy today. It's our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. So call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Charles Darwin knew that the predictions of his theory of gradual evolution were not fulfilled by discoveries in the fossil record, but he hoped that the gaps would be filled over time. Today, the same problems remain unresolved, while formidable new problems confront his theory from advances in genetics. As even atheist Richard Dawkins acknowledges, the machine code of the genes is uncannily computer-like. The current issue of the Christian Research Journal reveals Darwin's doubt and the case for intelligent design. Start your subscription today when you call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. Once again, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and a quick reminder that I cannot do what I do without you. It takes a team. It takes people standing shoulder to shoulder in the battle for truth. Paul said to Timothy, watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers. This ministry stands in the battle for truth. And remember, the systemic problem is not that pagans do what pagans do. The systemic problem is that we oftentimes do not do what we are commissioned to do. We're not salt and light. And as a result, the culture is literally unraveling before our very eyes. And so we ask you, if this ministry is making a difference in your life, to the Christian Research Journal, to the Christian Research Institute's ministries around the world, through the Bible Answer Man broadcast in which I interview the great minds of our time, like Stephen Meyer, who has the capacity to take the complex, make it simple and transferable, so that we can be equipped as lay people to make a difference while there is yet time. If you can support the ministry of the Christian Research Institute, I'd be pleased to send you a personalized copy of one of my books to you, a family member, or a friend when you join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team. Also, all this month, do remember the book that we have been promoting by Dr. Paul Copan, Is God a Moral Monster Making Sense of the Old Testament God? It is available for your gift, and you can give in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org. When you write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, and when you talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. Continuing the discussion with Stephen Meyer about Darwin's tree of life, which ultimately led to Darwin's doubts. Because according to Charles Darwin's tree of life, humans and fruit flies at the bottom share a common ancestor. It appears in the Origin of Species, the tree of life, to persuade the faithful that all species are, in the words of Darwin, lineal descendants of some few beings, which lived long before the first bed of the Cambrian system was deposited. So at the root of the tree is a handful of organic building blocks. At the tips of its budding branches are all modern species. And as I said in the opening of the broadcast, for multitudes, this icon has become the argument. The mere mention of it invokes devotees to bow deeply at the twin altars of common descent and natural selection. And what we're attempting to do through the article in the Christian Research Journal, through Stephen Meyer's books, and through a host of other resources, is to cause you to think deeply about this issue. To take into consideration what Stephen Meyer has been doing as a leading proponent of the intelligent design movement. This is a very significant movement, oftentimes called into question as a science stopper. And when people throw out that canard, you need to have an answer. And in fact, Stephen, how would you answer that objection? People just throw it out. It's a science stopper. It's something that militates against the advance of science. I heard Bill Nye, the science guy, say as much. How do you respond to that? In a way with gentleness and with respect, but nonetheless a way with passion, a poignant way of dismantling that argument.
Well, there's a couple important things to say about that. You often hear that intelligent design is not science. It's religion or pseudoscience or something else. And that it, secondly, that it stops science. First of all, it is science because it's using a standard method of scientific reasoning to come to its conclusions. In fact, the method that I develop in Darwin's Doubt is the very same method of reasoning that Darwin himself used in The Origin of Species. It has a name. It's called the method of multiple competing hypotheses. And the idea of this method is that when you're trying to explain an event in the remote past, you want to look for a cause which is known to have the power to produce the effect in question, the effect you're trying to explain. And when we come to the Cambrian explosion, we have to explain the origin of new forms of animal life, but more fundamentally, we have to explain the origin of all that information, that digital code that is present in the DNA molecules that would be necessary to build these animals. And when I was first investigating this question, I asked myself the question, what is the cause that we know of that can produce digital code? What is the cause, as Darwin put it, he said we should be looking for the cause now in operation, or a true cause, in the Latin, a vera cause, a cause known to produce the effect in question. What is the cause that produces digital code? What is the cause that produces information? And what we know from our experience, our uniform and repeated experience, which is the basis of all scientific reasoning, is that information always comes from an intelligent source. Whenever we see information and we trace it back to its source, whether we're talking about a hieroglyphic inscription or a paragraph in a book or a section of computer code, whenever we see information, we always come to a mind, not a material process. And that is a strong scientific conclusion because it's based on the same principles of reasoning that Darwin used. Once you come to that conclusion that we have evidence of a designing intelligence acting in the history of life in events like the Cambrian explosion where you see huge infusions of new information, you can also use it to make predictions about what we ought to find as we undertake further investigations in biology. So one prediction of intelligent design was that the so-called junk DNA would turn out not to be junk at all, but would turn out to be importantly functional. And that prediction is coming true. So intelligent design not only explains facts that we already have, it also predicts new facts. And that's exactly what we want a good scientific theory to do.
Let's pan back for just a moment. I've often said on the Bible Answer Man broadcast that there are three great apologetic issues. The first of which is the issue of origins. The second is evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The third is demonstrating that the Bible is a reliable authority. But in saying that, I emphasize that I think that the whole issue of origins is paramount. It is not just a apologetic issue. It is the apologetic issue.
It's foundational because, and I was going to comment on this, you made a very astute comment about that at the beginning of the hour. Every worldview must answer the question of what James Sayer, the great writer on worldviews, calls the prime reality question. What is the thing or the entity or the process from which everything else comes? And the dominant worldview in our elite knowledge culture today is the worldview of scientific naturalism or scientific materialism, which affirms that the thing from which everything else came is matter and energy and material processes that are acting on matter and energy. And one of the key material processes that the materialists point to is the process of natural selection acting on random mutation. That's the process that explains how you get from the very first life to all the forms of life we see today. So the Darwinian account of biological origins provides an indispensable plank in support of this broad scientific materialist worldview, and that's the worldview that is really dominant in the culture. You see it in the Cosmos series that's being broadcast now on Fox. You see it in the universities, the law schools, the courts, and it all turns on this central question of origins. And the origins question, in turn, depends on this really fundamental question of the origin of information. And that's where I think the intelligent design argument really has the high cards. There was a scientist who reviewed my book in Science, the journal Science last fall, and he attempted to answer the information argument, but in order to answer it, he had to invoke prior unexplained sources of information, showing that really the Darwinian establishment does not have an answer for the origin of information, but intelligent design does because of what we know from experience about what it takes to generate information. Information always comes from a mind, from an intelligent agent.
You know, I want to read something and have you comment on it. This is by Alex Rosenberg. Now, you're probably familiar with him. He is the chair of the philosophy department at Duke University. And I read his book a number of months ago, The Atheist's Guide to Reality, Enjoying Life Without Illusions. And what I found fascinating about Alex Rosenberg is that he is an honest atheist who bites the bullet. If you ask the question, is there a God? He'll say no. What is the nature of reality? What physics says it is? What is the purpose of the universe? None. What is the meaning of life? There is no meaning to life. Why am I here? Dumb luck. He goes on to say, is there a soul? Is it immortal? Are you kidding? Is there free will? Not a chance. In other words, you're just guided by brain chemistry and genetics. What happens when we die? Everything pretty much goes on as before, except us. What is the difference between right and wrong, good and bad? There is no moral difference between them,
right.
He says. And so he goes on and on, pointing out that there is an implication to buying the idea that nothing produces everything, that life comes from non-life, and that the life that comes from non-life produces morals.
Yeah, I find that kind of a perspective fascinating, too. The problem is, I think most people who hold a really consistent materialistic worldview have a very difficult time living consistently with that point of view. they can claim that they don't believe that there is an objective morality until their ox is gored, until their mother is murdered, or and then the impulse to affirm an objective moral order kicks in. And I think, you know, the atheistic existentialists were the philosophers who most attempted to live with the consequences of a meaningless universe that was produced by unguided, undirected natural processes. But that wasn't a very, the consequences of that worldview weren't very happy. Sartre said the watchwords of atheistic existentialism were anguish, forlornness, and despair. There can be no ultimate meaning. What I like to say is that without a purpose-driven universe, there can be no purpose-driven life. And most people instinctively think that their life does have some meaning or purpose. The great news, I think, from modern science is that we're seeing evidence of a purposive intelligence that is responsible for the digital code and the molecular machines inside cells, the fine-tuning of the universe, the definite beginning that we see now in cosmology for the universe as a whole. I think there's a very strong case from science to be made for a purposive intelligence, indeed a purposive transcendent intelligence, and therefore I think the theistic worldview makes better sense of the scientific evidence. And I don't think we really are left with that anguish, forlornness, and despair, and all the nihilism that follows from following materialistic thought to its logical conclusion.
I want to thank you once again for being on the broadcast and for not only equipping so many others, but equipping me in many ways. So we're deeply appreciative for your work and for your life.
I appreciate you too, Hank, and you do have a fine magazine. It was very much an honor for me to have a piece in it this month.
God bless you, my friend.
You too.
Thanks again for the article, for your life's work. Remember Darwin's Doubt. It is available to the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute by Stephen Meyer, also signature In the Cell. It is a magnum opus, and do remember to pray for this ministry and support the ministry if you can. As I mentioned earlier, you can do that in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org, and that's where you can get your subscription to the Christian Research Journal as well. Look forward to being right back here tomorrow with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Thank you for joining us for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you'd like more information about the Christian Research Institute or to order resources, just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or visit equip.org, where you can listen live or download archived broadcasts. Again, that's equip.org. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by the Christian Research Institute, a ministry supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what you'll find in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Is hacker activism the most heroic use of the internet? Liberating data, exposing lies, speaking truth to power? Or is it the most corrupting side of cyberspace? Stealing data, telling secrets, and endangering citizens? Although hacktivism has received much media attention, it has received little moral scrutiny. Other topics include Darwin's Doubt and the case for intelligent design, the Ten Commandments of Apologetics, was Hitler a Christian, same-sex marriage and today's church, is it silly to believe in Noah's flood, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. New atheists and best-selling authors such as Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett often point to the God of the Old Testament to justify their claims about the implausibility of his existence and the stupidity of those who believe in God. But rather than fall for their rhetoric and emotive stereotypes presented by Dawkins and others, we must commit ourselves to become so familiar with the truth that we recognize lies about God instantly when they surface. Paul Copan's book called Is God a Moral Monster? Making Sense of the Old Testament God is a reassuring and helpful tool that will help you do this. That's why we hope you'll request a copy today as our gift to thank you for your donation to support the Christian Research Institute and the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online at equip.org.